11:10 this morning, so those of you that want to finish your business, go out to meet the congressman. Why, he'll be arriving here. Gives me a great pleasure to introduce to you one of our district chairmen who will be introducing the guest speaker. And as you'll note on your program, that we're trying to spotlight the convention and, of course, the activities of the Republican Party of Alaska throughout the next 4 years will be spotlighted by these great people that have undertaken the job of directing the party on the district level. She's didn't want to take chairman. She wanted to be vice chairman because she didn't have time, and before the ink was even dry, why, her chairman got hatched or wasn't able to show up. So she's here acting in the capacity of leading her district, and I'd like to introduce to you Joyce Sherman, who is acting chairman from District 9. Joyce.
Thank you. Senator C.R. Lewis is a well-known leading Republican. However, I will give you a few facts that perhaps are not so well-known. C.R. is originally from Lewiston, Montana, in the heart of cattle country. He came to Alaska in 1939 by ship and worked as a miner, pipe fitter, and assayer, continuing his education by home study in the mining camps of the then sparsely settled territory. He is a licensed marine engineer and has served in the U.S. Merchant Marine in World War II. After the war, he settled in Anchorage and founded the C.R. Lewis Company, one of the largest mechanical contracting firms in the state. C.R. is an active pilot and a former Civil Air Patrol commander who still flies search and rescue missions. He's an avid outdoorsman and enjoys skiing, mountain climbing, and backpacking. He's the director of the Boys Club of Alaska, and he sponsors the Boys Club's baseball and basketball teams. He's also a member of the Chamber of Commerce, Isaac Walton League, National Rifle Association, Elks Club, and the John Birch Society. He's married to the former Patricia Drum and is the father of 3 girls and 3 boys. From ages 13 to 3. C.R. first ran for the state senate in 1966 and received one of the highest majorities in the state. He subsequently was re-elected in 1968 and 1970 with overwhelming majorities. He's up for re-election this year and has chosen to run for U.S. Senator. Let's give a big welcome to Senator C.R. Lewis.
Thank you very much, Joyce. Certainly a nice introduction. I want you all to know that I did not write that introduction. However, I am glad that somebody decided I would be introduced by a grassroots worker in the Republican Party. I was the speaker at a fundraising dinner here a few years ago out in the Matanuska Valley. I see some Matanuska people out there for a senator, and there was a little difficulty as to who was going to be the speaker, and it was a choice between a kind of a liberal politician and a kind of a conservative politician. I'm the one that's kind of conservative. And I was chosen to be the speaker, but they chose the more liberal politician to be the introducer and the master of ceremonies. Well, that was fine with me, but afterward I realized that I'd got the name and he'd got the game. He made a major speech introducing me, then a major speech after I made my speech. Spoke on the United Nations and many things that left me in pretty much of a spot. So I'm glad that Joyce Sherman did the job today, even if somebody did make that pretty rich and glowing. Anyway, it's a pleasure to be here today, and as far as we're talking about that liberal and conservative business, I think I'll tell you that I'm a liberal, not a conservative. Now, that may come as startling news to you, and it probably should. It's a rather well-kept secret, and I'm going to get back to that in a few minutes and talk about it. But first, let me say that it's a real pleasure to speak to you, and I consider it an honor, a privilege, to speak to you here at the 1974 Republican Convention in Sitka. Of course, you know that I'm running for the United States Senate. As such, I have political consultants and advisors. And do I ever have advisors? I've got thousands of friends here in the state. My mail in the legislature is, I think, the heaviest mail in the legislature. And it seems that every one of my correspondents and every one of my friends is an advisor. The consultants have told me that I should modify what they call a stern image by telling some jokes. They said I should use a little humor and tell some jokes. Well, this is not exactly my bag, you know. Except for being 39 years old, I have nothing in common with Jack Benny. And the trouble with political jokes, in the first place, the trouble with me telling jokes, they'd probably be political jokes. And the trouble with political jokes, as you all know, there have been too many of them elected already. And now you might think that was a joke in itself, but it's really not. The National Safety Council, and Ken Brady, my company, does belong to the National Safety Council, and they put out statistics, and it shows that of all major accidents, 50% of them happen in the home. And some people say the other 50% happen in the voting booth. So, anyway, I mentioned liberals and conservatives. Some Democrats think I am very conservative. In fact, they've said that I'm so conservative that I would take the nation back to the time of McKinley. And I, thinking about that, I don't know if that's all that bad. At least under McKinley, we freed Cuba. And I don't really think that I would have to go back that far. Roosevelt suited me pretty well. I mean, Teddy. I think I should tell you the reason that I was given this advice and make this attempt at jokes. These consultants came up and heard me make a speech, and I was very confident of the speech I made. It was ringing, inspiring, motivating, fact-filled, very convincing. At least I was convinced of that. And at the end of the speech, the applause was less than deafening. So I asked for questions, if there are any questions and answers. I asked for questions, and the silence was deafening. I asked this, repeated the question a few times about questions, and nobody asked any questions. They didn't seem much interested. And finally, in the back, one man raised his hand and tickled me to death. And I said, sir, do you have a question? He said, yes. Is there anyone else running for this seat? So I'm thinking about these jokes and what in the world to do about them. As I look back at jokes, I think of the old Confucius Say jokes. They were popular when I was in the joking era. And I thought of trying to clean up, sanitize some of them and bring them up to a modern date, and it was pretty hard to do. But I did think of one thing that Confucius, I understand, said. He said, naked college boy who mate naked co-ed having lucky streak. Well, that wasn't so bad, was it? Anyway, I'm not going to try anymore on Confucius. I would normally try some Polish jokes. I kind of like them, but I have a problem with Polish jokes, too. My wife is Polish. I'm very proud of my wife. She's the brains in our family, and as any of you can easily see, she's certainly got the looks in our family. But she is Polish, and she asked me a few days ago, I was talking about this joke business, and she said, what is black and blue and hurts all over? I admitted that I did not know, and she said, the next person I hear telling a Polish joke. Well, I better get off this joke kick, Sid. It's a little hard to tell jokes without involving anyone on the end of it, without making somebody the butt of those jokes. Will Rogers told some jokes about the Senate. Kerr, you know, was his fellow Oklahoman. And he told some jokes about those senators, and Senator Kerr got very upset, and he wrote gave a scathing denunciation of Will Rogers. So Will came back, and he said something like this. He said, "The thing about my jokes is that they don't hurt anybody. The thing about the senator's jokes is that they become laws, and the laws become jokes." Well, the U.S. Senate doesn't have any franchise on this condition. We find in Alaska, as we try to do what legislators can do to bring about crime control and law enforcement, that much, if not most, of our criminal law is a joke. It's written for the benefit of the criminal at the expense and the danger of society. The Supreme Court has been criticized for this of late, and in an effort to untarnish their considerably tarnished image, and they've been criticized for their lack of efficiency, they have come up with a plan to increase their efficiency. They are establishing speed courts. Now, you've all seen speed gates in supermarkets for purchasers with less 8 articles or less. Well, these speed courts are to speed up justice, therefore crooks with 8 crimes or less. So, anyway, this morning I am happy to be here, and the question always comes up as you think about what you're going to say at a place like this. What shall I say? What is most appropriate? What is most beneficial and worthwhile? What does a Republican say to Republicans? I could talk about my political opponent. I'd just love to. The junior senator from Alaska. He's distinguished himself by reading the secret Pentagon papers at midnight, crying as he did so, by picketing the White House with a placard on his shoulder, by predicting the end of the world if the Kanakan blast were detonated. Distinguished himself by nominating himself for vice president when no one else would nominate him at the Democratic Convention. This, of course, was extremely embarrassing to Alaskans and Democrats. I don't know what happened to that nomination, but I'm told that it died for want of a second. He's also distinguished himself by earning the poorest attendance record in the Senate, by being voted by Nader's Raiders as the least effective senator in the Senate. Our senator now discounts this rating, which he has earned as the least effective in the Senate, by stating that, or at least implying that the poll was taken by those who were out to get him. Well, Nader's Raiders certainly are no group of ultra-conservatives out to get an ultra-liberal senator. He's now saying, the senator is, that free enterprise is the answer, that government regulation and control does not work. That's what he says. What does he do? In fact, somebody said he was like a chameleon. I guess that's the way you pronounce that little lizard that adapts himself. He said this on television, also speaking to the Chamber of Commerce. Like a chameleon that adapts himself and changes his color to comport with the surroundings, whatever surroundings he's in. However, in his native habitat, he always goes back to his real color, which is a bright pink. By all standards, our junior senator has one of the worst in all ratings. The ACA and the rest of them has one of the worst, if not the worst, ratings as far as free enterprise is concerned. In every vote that we've been able to research, he has voted in favor of big government, government controls, attendant government regulation, and has voted adverse to the operation of a free market economy. I won't go into all of them. Senate Bill 258, land use, which eventually will give the complete land control to the land czars of the government and development. And here's what they will have under their control. Quote, any development which might hinder the long-term public interest. That will be at the mercy of a government land czar. It'll be a blank check for dictatorship of the land. That's one of the things he voted for. Food stamps for strikers. I could go on and on here. Public service employment, $1.2 billion for this. Job assistance, which Peter Dominick, the well-known, well-liked Colorado Republican, said is a WPA-style legislation which comes closer to achieving immortality than all the gods of ancient Greece and Rome. His rating in this particular poll, I'll mention one other, that he voted for public financing of campaigns. By that, he would force you and me to finance his campaign also Teddy Kennedy's. He and Teddy Kennedy have the same rating on the conservative index, minus two. I'm not going to mention his $200,000 house and how he's going to finance it. I understand a Republican did that in Fairbanks. I'm not going to mention that. A few other things. I'll save them for the Democrats and independents. You Republicans don't need that. So let's talk about Republicans. What might benefit Republicans? After all, it is a Republican convention. Where are we? Where are we going? How are we going to get there? And are we going as a body united in purpose and goals? Or are we going as a divided and purposeless group, floundering and flailing in the wilderness with the only thing to unite us being the banner under which we sail, that of Republicans? Well, let's go as a united, purposeful group. And the first thing I'd like to do today is dispel and dispose of the misapprehension and misconception existing within the party about conservatives and liberals and the real or imagined division of the party along conservative and liberal lines. I told you a while ago I was liberal, not a conservative. Here's Webster's Dictionary of a Liberal. One who is marked by generosity and open-handedness, a giver. Going beyond that, it says, liberalism is the quality or state of being liberal, a theory in economics emphasizing individual freedom from restraint based upon free competition, a self-regulating market, and the gold standard. A conservative, and again by Webster's Dictionary, is one who, quote, opposes change. Well, these definitions from Webster expressly and explicitly make me a liberal and not a conservative. I have for years espoused individual freedom, the free market economy, the gold standard. As far as being open-handed and generous, I think I could prove that I probably give away more money in a year than 99% of the Americans. That's got a financial statement to prove that. The conservative definition, one who opposes change, certainly does not fit me. The reason I ran for office in 1966, same time Wally Hickel ran, was that I wanted a change. I wanted a change in 1966. I figured there was a better way, and there is a better way. And the reason I'm going to Washington in 1974 is that I want a change in government in 1974. In the real world, however, there is no question but what I'm known as a conservative, and I don't dispute that. We all understand that. Anyone who would call C.R. Lewis a liberal would risk ridicule from his peer group. But if C.R. Lewis, the state's leading conservative, is actually, by definition, a liberal. Why should we allow ourselves to fragment and, to our loss and our opposition's gain, fragment over terms which we cannot define? Is it worthwhile to divide our party, our effort and our effectiveness and our strength over semantics, which few of us understand and upon which probably none of us agree? Let us instead agree upon republicanism, and agree that it must be synonymous with Americanism, and then consider this foundation of belief and principles upon which we can agree, on which we can stand, and which we can defend. What are they? What are these beliefs and principles? I'll enumerate them briefly. A free and sovereign America. Avoiding war and maintaining peace from a position of military strength, the only basis upon which peace can be assured. And let us agree with President Roosevelt, and again I mean Teddy, that we should speak softly and carry a big stick. And let us agree in the field of economics upon a balanced budget, that deficit spending by government is the taking of our substance and our productive effort, a robbery of the accumulated savings of the old, and the indebting of unborn generations. Let us agree on law enforcement and crime control. No civilized nation can exist without it. And let us agree that government is a spender, not an earner, that anything that we get from government, it must first take from us, that the proper role of government is a protector and not a provider, that any government that is big enough and powerful enough to supply to us all our needs is big enough and powerful enough to take from us anything it wants to, including our freedom. Let us agree with Abraham Lincoln, our first Republican president, who said that government should do for the people only that which the people cannot do for themselves. And let us further agree that as far as the federal government is concerned, what it should do for the people is very strictly and precisely limited, delineated by the Constitution, and it should not go beyond that. Let us reflect for a moment, if you will, upon the protection, on the opposite proposition that government is a provider and not a protector. And here in the state of Alaska, let's see what that would mean. Do you know who you would be looking to for your sustenance and your security if government is your provider and not your protector? Think about it for a minute. I'll read off some of them. Bill Egan, Mike Bradner, Willard Bowman, Jeannie Chans, Bill Parker, Russ Meekins, Jr. that is, Philip Guy. Most of you probably have never heard of him. If you have, you know what I'm talking about. Now, I'm not saying anything personally against any of these people, but if you're looking at them for security, ask yourself, what is their record of productivity? What is their record of administration and accomplishment? What evidence can they show of organizational and administrative capacity? Government is a poor, poor place to look for security. I mentioned, and I want to go back to it, Lincoln said that government should do only for the people, that's what they could not do for themselves. He also said something else. He said, government of the people, by the people, and for the people. I heard that leader of the band here last night with his jokes, and I was telling my wife I decided not to use any of those jokes in my attempt at humor this morning. The only one that I appreciated was his one about the GOP when he mentioned government of the people. And I didn't think that was a joke. I think that's great. I think that's what we need is government. I think Lincoln knew what he was talking about when he said what we need is government of the people, by the people, and for the people. Now, again, what shall we talk about today? The crucial issue of this convention is how to get elected. Or how to get Republicans elected. I guess with me, it's how to get elected. With you, it's how to get Republicans elected. I have been elected for 10 years in the state Senate. I've run in 4 campaigns. And I would like to say this morning, based on the experience of my 4 campaigns, this is now my 5th campaign, I would like to afford you whatever benefit I can of my experience. And the first advice I have to give to you this morning is so simple, so fundamental, that you may be inclined to dismiss it as Pollyanna, as kid stuff, Boy Scout, Squire from Squaresville. And that may be, but listen to it and remember it. Because this bit of advice is the ingredient absolutely essential to success, and its absence is a guarantee of failure. How to win an election? Number one, you must have faith. You must think you can. That's the essential ingredient, the first one. And before you dismiss this, the Sunday school, remember we are some 200 Republicans gathered here in a state of over 300,000 people that the independents and Democrats outnumber us 5-1. Winning will not be easy, and it will not be a product of ordinary, ward-healing, pork-barrel politics. We've got to have more than that. But we can win. There is a formula. Here it is. There's a secret weapon, which is an open secret, but somehow it appears to be unknown to many. Here's how. As we base our efforts on those fundamental principles which I have briefly enumerated or attempted to enumerate, the basic beliefs and principles upon which the Republican Party was founded, which in turn are the principles upon which our nation was founded, we will find reservoirs of support we never knew existed. Support which is available to us only as we make the principles under which we operate as Republicans synonymous with the principles of the Constitutional Republic under which this nation grew great, strong, and free. Now don't write it off. There's a lot of help out there. Tens of thousands of people subscribe without thinking subscribe to these principles without thinking of themselves as Republicans. They're registered as independents, and many of them are registered as Democrats. Don't let the odds dismay you. 5-1 is not insurmountable. I think when I first ran for the state Senate in 1966, I think the odds were at least 50-1. They might have been 500-1. I'd never been in politics, didn't know beans about it. I thought if I gave $100 or $25 to the Republican Party, I'd discharge my obligation. My concern was where I was going to go take my family for a skiing vacation. That was my biggest concern. I had just joined the John Birch Society a few months before, and at that time it was not recognized as it is now as a group of patriotic, loyal Americans who believe in God, saluting the flag, upholding the principles upon which our nation was founded. It was a big mystery. A lot of people didn't know, and my opposition made hay over that full-page ads, and my chances of winning the election were pretty slim. But I won it in a three-man race. I took second place, second to Carl Brady, who was at that time the top vote-getter in the whole slot, Republican, with whom I served in the Senate. See, he's here. I hope he's here this morning. But anyway, we can win. There are reservoirs of support out there. And I'd just like to cite the U.S. Infantry, U.S. Army Infantry Journal of 1939. Some people here may recognize it. Resolute action by a few determined men is often decisive. Time and again, numbers have been overcome by courage and resolution. Sudden changes in a situation, so startling as to appear miraculous, have frequently been brought about by the action of small parties. There is an excellent reason for this. The trials of battle are severe. Troops are strained to the breaking point. At the crisis, any small incident may prove enough to turn the tide one way or the other. The enemy has invariably difficulties of which we are ignorant. To us, his position may appear favorable, while to him it may seem desperate. Only a slight extra effort on our part may be decisive. That's what we have to do, is put forth that effort. And while faith and magic of believing, which I have referred to, are as real as this building, as necessary as anything can be to winning an election, with them there must come dedication and action. And for dedication and action, let me cite a true story of the famous swamp fox, Francis Marion, during the Revolutionary War. Now, quote, "One time a British officer was brought blindfolded into Marion's camp to arrange an exchange of prisoners. Marion offered his guest a dinner of unsalted yams on bark and a mug of spring water. The astonished Englishman asked if it was the usual fare. 'No,' Marion replied. 'Usually we have swamp water with a pinch of vinegar to make it go down. Since we have company today, we're having a little more than usual.' Back in the British headquarters, the English officer reported to his superior, 'I have seen an American general serving without pay, almost without clothes, living on roots and drinking swamp water, all for what they call liberty and freedom. What chance have we against these men? We can win. Watergate has been mentioned as adverse to our chances of winning. It is, but what can we do about it? And I answer, we rise above it. Watergate was not perpetrated by men and women who operated by the standards of the Founding Fathers or of the Republican Party established by Lincoln or the principles to which we must adhere if we are to prevail. Regarding the resolutions in opposition or resolutions relative to the president resigning, any resolution coming from this convention I oppose. I personally oppose them. I personally oppose them and advise against them. Chuck Bailey, the National Committee, he's here today, I think, advised me and advised others that a Republican running in opposition to the president will not be elected, nor will a Republican running on a platform of defending the president be elected. I agree. We have to run on our own platform, on our own record, on our own virtues, and on our own merits. I read with some surprise in the Sitka Sentinel that C.R. Lewis is the only Republican who has an, announce for the Senate has called for the President's resignation and impeachment. I took this up with Thad just a minute ago. Thad and I had a personal discussion in his office some weeks ago, and that's where that came from. I think you all know I am not a Nixon man. I have not been for years. I supported Congressman John Ashbrook in his brief run for the Republican presidency. I have not, as a Republican president or a Republican senator in the state, occupied myself with decrying and disparaging a Republican president. However, I do not agree with Nixon's policies. Haven't for years, not since 1960. I felt mighty badly at that time when Kennedy beat him. But since that time, I have not been. However, and I made this plain to Thad in our discussion, however, I am not calling for a resignation or impeachment, certainly not, not impeachment on the grounds of Watergate, and I want to make that clear to everybody. A little more advice. I'm going to wind this down pretty quick on how to get elected, what to do, Republicans, what to do in election time. Personal attacks against fellow Republicans should be avoided like the plague. Now, this does not mean that Republicans don't have to run on their voting record. They do. I think most Republicans recognize this and are prepared to defend that record. They expect to. If they don't, they should. But personal attacks in a primary, they're like alcohol. Looks tempting at the moment, gives you a boost at the moment, but while it may be a very short-term gain, it's a long-term loss. It's no benefit to win the battle and lose the war. And while I'm on personal attacks, I might depart from my script here a moment and relate to you that I think the smear is going to start early in this campaign. It's already started against C.R. Lewis. I was in Fairbanks a while ago, and a couple of ladies came up to me, matronly type, and they said, "We want to know right from your own lips, do you advocate the legalization of marijuana?" Well, I said, "No, of course I don't. I've always been a strong opponent of the legalization of marijuana." Well, they said, "The story is going around Fairbanks that you are advocating the legalization of marijuana." So I found out where that came from. It came from a Democratic source. Then I was at Big Lake a few days ago, and I won't go into that, but there was a school teacher there, and she came up to me and addressed me and said that she would like to work in my campaign. I was glad of that. Somehow I got the reputation as not liking school teachers, and that's not true. My mother was a school teacher. My sister's a school teacher. I married a school teacher. I've got six kids in school, so I have a big stake and interest in school teachers. But anyway, this gal came up to me and questioned me and cross-questioned me, and afterwards she said she would like to work in my campaign. And of course, I was happy to have her do it. But after I was gone, she said to Terry, my assistant, she said, "What they're saying about C.R. Lewis is that he does all this moralizing in the paper and on the radio, but down in Juneau, he's known as a terrible girl chaser." I told Terry, I said, "Well, I'd rather take that as a compliment." You get to be over 40, you know, you take things like that as a compliment. Anyway, it may be possible to win this primary and then lose the general election. History is replete with examples of this happening, and in fact, right here in the state of Alaska, this has happened in my time, and I think you're all aware of a couple of major instances where they won the primary, and because of actions taken in the primary, lost the general. That's certainly self-defeating, and as I say these days, counterproductive. But my next advice to delegates, Republican activists from all over the state, is to field candidates and support candidates who are above reproach. As Chuck Bailey said, Watergate cannot be defended, but we can rise above Watergate, and we can rise above a Watergate in Washington, D.C., but we cannot rise above one in Alaska. Your candidate must be like Caesar's wife, above reproach. Require the candidate whom you support that he be ideologically committed to the Republican principles in which we believe and to which I sincerely hope we all rededicate ourselves at this convention. These basic Republican principles can best be stated in half a dozen words: less government, more individual responsibility. This basic precept can be traced through the rise of Western civilization from the time of Moses and Joshua and Samuel, who refused to give the Israelites a king and literally forced them to govern themselves. On down to Washington, who said government is like fire, a dangerous servant and a fearful master, to Jefferson, who said he governs best who governs least, to our own Abraham Lincoln, who said government should do only for the people that which they cannot do for themselves, and to our own modern expression that government should be a protector and not a provider. Runaway government is just as destructive to our economy and our nation under someone calling himself a Republican as under a Democrat or any other name. Federal employees are now quoted from Washington, D.C., in figures from 13.8 million to 15.6 million. I've been unable to get a definitive number of federal employees. Nobody knows how many people are on the federal payroll. It is impossible to establish how many boards, commissions, agencies, and bureaus there are in the federal government. The General Accounting Office has told us this. They're all overlapping, duplicating, conflicting, regulating, interfering, delaying, hampering, discouraging, and destroying. To set up more boards and commissions is to compound the now nearly mortal affliction of our nation, too much government. Whether this is done by a Democrat Mike Gravel or a Republican pragmatist will not alter its malignancy. To focus on the problems at hand, the way to more oil and gasoline, to more wheat and bread, to lower prices, to less inflation, is, as Franklin said, as plain as the way to market. It's to get the government out of competition with free enterprise and let the free market work. It's to let the producers produce. It's to bind the federal government down, as Jefferson said, with the change of the Constitution. Let local governments protect their own environment, as only they can do. It's to get economy into the government and get the government out of the economy. Let me close by identifying myself with Lincoln's philosophy and giving you a little closer look at my own philosophy, which comports exactly with it. He said, "I am always for the man who wishes to work. You cannot bring about prosperity by discouraging thrift. You cannot strengthen the weak by weakening the strong. You cannot help the wage earner by pulling down the wage payer. You cannot further the brotherhood of man by encouraging class hatred. You cannot help the poor by discouraging the rich. You cannot establish sound security by spending more than you earn. You cannot build character and courage by taking away man's initiative and independence. You cannot help any man permanently by doing for him what he could and should do for himself." He further said, and listen to this, while the people retain their virtue and vigilance, no administration, by any extreme of wickedness or folly, can very seriously injure the government. And he said, "I appeal to you again, constantly bear in mind that with you, the people, not with politicians, not with presidents, not with office seekers, but with you is the question, shall the liberties of this country be preserved to the latest generation?" So, ladies and gentlemen, resolve the question of Republican principles in your own mind, in your own heart. Select your candidate. I hope that I'm one of them that you select to support. As Lincoln said, secure in the right, as God gives us to see the right. Give this election the faith and dedication of which it is worthy. And let's win in 74. I appreciate your attention and interest, and I thank you for listening. God bless you.
Thank you very much, C.R., with those kind of thoughts and those kind of words and that kind of dedication. Why, I'm sure that as we go down the line to November, why, we're going to be in great shape, and we're going to show them that we do have a good campaign going. We have all kinds of people coming in here. I've got notes all over the place. I've got several announcements to make. Take them as they come here. First, anybody who would like to meet Congressman Young at the airport, meet in front of the convention hall at 10:30. He'll be arriving at 11:10 at the airport, and those of you that are not in caucuses or not in committee work, I'd recommend that you go out and meet him. We should try and meet all of our dignitaries and our candidates to make them feel welcome and warm, comfortable at our convention. Governor Miller will be arriving at 1 p.m. today, and any of you that would like to go out and meet him, why, he'll be coming in about 2 hours later. We're going to get, we've got quite a lot of work to do, but I know that in conventions, why, people like to play a little bit too, particularly at 3 o'clock in the morning. But they're trying to put together a boat cruise, and Dean Settler announced yesterday that he was trying to put this thing together. They need a minimum of 40 people, a maximum of 50 people. The cost of the cruise is $5 a person. It'll be a two-hour cruise, and if you give your money to Dean by noon today, why, he'll see if he can't put the 40 together. If he can't, why, you'll get your money back. We've got... at the table, not on it. We have one very important announcement that I want to make for the benefit of the district chairman or the delegate chairman that are here. If your district chairman's not here, well, I imagine that your delegation has caucused and you have a delegate chairman. But we do...